eLearning Brunch, your podcast for digitalization and learning. Hi, and welcome to another episode of eLearning Brunch. Today, we'll have a first in the show. Every show, we have a first, but today, we'll have our first guest from the IMC, which is the company that I also work for and who also sponsors this podcast. So let's jump right in to our podcast with our guest today, and that is Wolfram Joost. He is the CTO of IMC. Welcome, Wolfram.
Welcome, Kenneth. Thanks for the invitation.
Okay, so let's jump right in and get give our listeners a little bit insight of a little bit about who you are. So can you give me a little bit of background to your career path to becoming the CTO of IMC?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. You mentioned my name, Wolfram Joost, and my career started with when I studied business science at the University of Saarland. That's many, many years ago. And my professor at this time even was Professor Scheer, who is now also the founder and owner of the IMC company. After I have finalized my study, I joined a research institute in Saarbrücken, which was called Institut für Wirtschaftsinformatik. So it was at this time, I think, one of the biggest German research institute. I did my doctoral thesis there. And after that, I joined a company which was just founded at this time in Saarbrücken, which was called the Scheer GmbH. This company then later on was transferred into the IDE Scheer AG. The company was then stock listed, and I joined this company very early. And in 2000, I became a board member of this IDE Scheer AG. I was this until 2009, and then the company was acquired by a company, also a German software company, the second biggest company, Software AG in Darmstadt. And from 2009 until 2018, I was board member of Software AG, also CTO responsible for the technology. And I left the company in 2018. And then I joined the shareholding network and became board member of IMC. And I'm also a managing director of the shareholding. So since my whole career, I was a CTO, you can say, and it's something that I like very much. Okay. Even if I studied business science, that's a little bit the not normal version of a CTO, but
there's two interesting things. In what you've said already, the first interesting thing I think is how basically you studied with Professor Scheer and now ended up working with him. So that's an interesting career path development. For those individuals that are not familiar with CTO and his responsibilities, could you tell us a little bit about what the responsibilities of a CTO are?
Yeah, a CTO is the, let's say, person who owns the strategic direction of the technology development. So the CTO has to answer questions like, what is our value proposition in the market? He has to answer the why question. Why should customers buy our software? You know, it's not so difficult to answer the what and how question if you have answered the why question. And therefore, that's a very important thing for a CTO. He has normally a good understanding of the markets, of the technologies in the market. A CTO talks a lot to analysts like Gartner or Forrester. So he is the technology brain of the company, and he gives direction regarding the future positioning and development of the technology of the company. Also involved in acquisitions, in technology acquisitions. He is very often also the first salesperson when it comes to selling technology. That's what some CTOs don't want to hear and don't like. But if the CTO who owns the responsibility for the technology is not able to sell it, who then in the company should be able to sell it? So therefore, that's a very important aspect of the job.
So when we originally when we did a little research, or when I did the research and talked to you about the upcoming podcast, I had jumped in the podcast with the idea of calling it Moneyball in e-learning. In the conversations leading up to the podcast, though, with you, I found that the topic Moneyball. For those people who don't know, the topic Moneyball is a topic related to the American sports scene, where in, I believe it was 2002, the Oakland Athletics set up a team basically based on sports analytics. And that's how they built their team and were successful. But in talking to you now in the last couple things or sessions preparing, what came to me is a topic that you said, and I think that is the better topic for our conversation here, and that's why our episode is now called "Learning Analytics and Asking the Right Questions." So you addressed that a couple of times. So let's start with that idea. So what exactly does learning analytics mean? Let's start with that.
So let's start with the term analytics. To make it very short, you can say analytics means doing the math on data, meaning you have data and you do mathematical operations on the data to support decisions. So analytics means at the end doing faster and better decisions. And to do faster and better decisions, you have to ask the right questions. That's the same in your private life, in your relationships, wherever you are. If you have to make decisions, decisions are based on data. And data are the result of asking the right questions. And this is in general, in my opinion, one of the most important capabilities of a company making decisions fast and in the right way. So when we talk about learning analytics, what does it mean? So learning is in many companies a very important, let's say, approach. Everybody understands that it really makes sense to invest in education and the learning of your people. Yeah. It's the sentence, to prove your company means to prove your people. Yeah. And the point is that, in my opinion, for many years, learning and learning and development was very much focused on the input. So how many people did we train last year? How many content was produced? How many courses had been created? So we all define these KPIs who say, what was the investment in learning and development? More
So it was a
learning,
function of volume, so to say.
functions, volumes, metrics, all that stuff. But to put a lot of money and effort into learning and development is good, but you have also to look to the outcome. What is the outcome of this investment? And the outcome cannot be the number of courses created. And the outcome cannot be the number of WBTs launched.
That would be in both cases a relatively simplistic view of
Exactly. So the outcome has to be, what is the business impact on learning on development? Do we see a business impact in sales? Do we see a business impact in better product quality? Do we see a business impact in higher customer satisfaction? So people invest in learning and development to create better outcomes. And every investment in a company has to answer these key questions. What's the business outcome? Whether it's learning, whether it's HR, whether it's marketing, whether it's R&D, all business units have to answer the key question, what's the impact on business outcome? And that's now also the case for learning and development.
Okay, so in this case, I would say most of our listeners are somewhat familiar with an LMS. So where learning analytics then basically takes place is that currently in the various LMSs, ours included, we generate several reports. But from my understanding, analytics now aggregates these reports, correct? So is your approach to the reports that we currently generate different? So what is the added value that we now get through learning analytics?
You know that reports are the classical form of analytics. Let's say it's the old version of analytics you can call reporting, if I'm a little bit provocative. What is a report? A report is a defined structure of content that is generated every month or every quarter or every year. And it always shows you the same content and the same structure. And it always comes at the end of a period, of a week, of a quarter, of a year. What analytics means in my definition is way more interactive, way more dynamic, and way more, let's say, on short-term decisions. So interactive discovery means I'm sitting in front of a dashboard. I'm not sure what I'm looking for, but let's see what was the development of learning and development in the last month in the European region, especially in Germany. Then I look what was development of sales in this region. And then I look, is there any correlation between learning investment and sales? If not, I'm going to the next region. So meaning when I start doing the analysis, I'm not sure what I'm really looking for, but the more I dig deeper, the more I get a feeling that there seems to be a pattern. And then I go to the next KPI, I go to the next dimension, I compare it, and then I see, wow, there is a pattern. If I compare now Germany with France and with Great Britain, then I see some commonalities and some differences. And now look to the commonalities. It seems to be that this type of content offered in this type of user experience seems to have the bigger impact than this type of content combined with this type of experience. So meaning that a report is a static content structure generated at a certain point of time. It's not bad. Don't get me wrong. But to become more flexible, more faster, and with more impact, you need this interactive discovery, playing with KPIs, playing with dimensions, combining it, and searching for patterns.
Okay. But now the conversation went a little different than I was thinking of, attaching onto that now, when you explain that to me, I wouldn't consider myself to be an expert. And for me, it sounds to be still relatively complicated because you said the interaction, the searching, the looking. And if it is an activity where you should find the information quickly, I would assume that the information should be made easier accessible and also direct the user a little bit more than having him explore the information and then making his own conclusions. That would be something for me that somebody in an advanced position should do. But somebody who isn't as advanced in analyzing data or something like that needs to be, I think, a little bit more guided to the information that he needs.
It's a combination. Yes. So, of course, now looking to IMC, we are delivering out of the box dashboards. So meaning this is out of the box a default. You can look at it. You see correlations. You can detect patterns without doing anything, a little bit of drill down from one to the other. But that's, let's say, very simple to do. Mm-hmm. And we talk about self-service analytics because it's not enough, in my opinion, to have a central IT department that creates every quarter a report and send it through the whole company. Mm-hmm. So we need self-service analytics, meaning the people in the business departments, they need to be enabled to do analytics and not being dependent on a central department. And if I need something more in a report, I have to wait 6 weeks until I get it. So this mm-hmm. is too long. We have to become more flexible. And therefore, you get out-of-the-port dashboards with a very simple, let's say, user experience. But then you can also drill down and do your own analysis. So it's this combination. But it's all self-service, meaning it's all decentralized.
Okay. If you had to identify three groups of individuals individuals that you would target, who would you see as being targeted by learning analytics? So classic, I guess, would be HR and the learning and development department. Who else?
Yeah, all people who make decisions and all people who put money into learning and development. So this might be HR. This might be the head of sales, because mm-hmm. the head of sales is interested in getting his people trained and educated. So the head of sales, the head of marketing, the head of HR, or R&D. So all people who invest money in learning and development, and all people who have to make decisions about these investments. But also the learner. The learner is investing time into learning. So also the learner has to make the right decisions, what to learn, when, and how. And to support the learner in this decision making, the learner needs KPIs.
Okay. Yeah? Then adding on to that, your vision of the product, learning analytics, does that only extend to the software aspect? In other words, providing the user with a dashboard, or we just identified a couple of categories of learners, but there is a distinct need to also enable to inform. Is that something that you also see as part of the vision of your product? So not only the product itself, but extending across that a service aspect.
Sure. I think you have to provide the technology, the product, the capabilities and the features and all that stuff. But the key question is how to apply that on the customer side. And sure, at the beginning, and I think also later on, we need people educating these roles, HR managers, learners, sales of head of sales, in how to apply learning analytics capabilities to their job and to their role. This is something new to some extent. Mm-hmm. But what we see is that there seems to be a huge demand for learning analytics in companies who are investing since years in LMS systems or in content or in training, because, and that's in all companies the same thing, at the end there will be the day where your boss is asking you, tell me your outcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and therefore you have to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's in the podcast leading up to this one, we discussed the topic quite at length. And one of them in the two previous podcasts, one of the two topics that came up was basically that simply providing an LMS and expecting the users to be more efficient isn't possible. So we talked about, first of all, starting at the base, increasing the quality of content. So that was one of the core things. But now we're at the next step where we're using learning analytics, in my opinion, to make it kind of like a holistic thing. So you're now providing good content. And Now with learning analytics, you're learning how to evaluate the use of that content and also, in my opinion, then reflect that back to the original user, so the learner. Is that how you would see it too?
Yeah, that is a key aspect of it. Yeah, that we generate a type of life cycle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So learning and development is not a static process. Yeah. You cannot say, I have defined my learning and development processes and now they run for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. That will not work. You have to continuously adapt and extend your learning and development processes regarding efficiency, regarding effectiveness, regarding degree of innovation. The same for content. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You cannot treat all people in the same way. That's mm-hmm. not possible. People have different capabilities to learn. Some people learn more visually. Other people need some textbook. Other people learn on the evening. Other people learn on the weekend. So people are different in their learning capabilities. And it doesn't make sense, therefore, to treat all people in the same way. That's what we do in schools. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that's the right approach, that there were 40 kids sitting in a room and they all get the same content, the same approach, the same things. That's why some kids are better and some people are not so good. Not because they are not good learners, because the approach is not right for them. And in companies, we talk about this personalization, individualization of learning mm-hmm. paths. Yeah. And that's okay. All supported by learning analytics. What's the right learning path for this learner or for this group of learners? What's the right type of content for this objective? All these questions need answers, and learning analytics gives answers to all these questions.
Okay, so how would you describe your vision of learning analytics for the IMC then?
Yeah, I think that with learning analytics, we can take learning and development to the next level, to a more strategic level. In many companies, learning and development is a tick in a box, to be honest. Yeah. So you ask HR manager, are you doing that? Sure. Okay. Done. Next. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but it's not a real, let's say, strategic approach. It's mm-hmm. we have to do it because everybody is doing it and we do compliance training and we do all that stuff. But this approach is not bad. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's mm-hmm. not delivering the full strategic potential of learning and development.
It seems to be like a blanket approach.
Yeah,
so you're
exactly.
Covering
yeah.
your bases, but no real effect or no specific measure.
Exactly. It's more operational, tactical. We do it and we invest and okay, we are fine. But mm-hmm. companies are not using learning and development as the key enabler for the strategic development of the company. And that's what it is. I said it. To future-proof your company, you have to future-proof your people. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there is no future of the company. So, And this is my main message. And therefore, you can buy technology like hell. You can create content like hell. You can increase your volume of content by 1,000%. If at the end there is no outcome, it's a waste of time and money. So, and therefore, the potential of learning and development is way bigger than today in the companies. And therefore, with learning analytics, we move these activities to a strategic level so that the C-level gets the awareness of what the impact of learning and development can be. Managers make decisions. Decisions are made on KPIs. So, and mm-hmm. we have to make learning and development visible on the company's strategic dashboard.
Okay, so the ideal solution then, or the ideal case, is when learning analytics will provide the tools and the output to basically show the outcome of your training. So in an ideal case, okay, well, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but you can see the effectiveness of your courses. The classic example, I guess, is in sales. When you have a certain sales course that teaches maybe a certain sales technique or something like that, and that becomes measurable in your sales figures, that would be a small but ideal scenario where you could say learning analytics is effective, correct?
Exactly, and that's at the end. Mm-hmm. Every company wants to improve customer satisfaction, and every company wants to get better market acceptance, and learning and development can do that. But, and that's a last remark from my side, you have to do it continuously. Mm-hmm. It's not only a question of intensity. Yeah. And you see this also in your private life. Let's say if you want to lose weight, you say, mm-hmm. okay, I go to the gym. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Monday morning, you go to the gym. In the afternoon, you go back, look to the mirror. Nothing has happened. Next day, you go to the gym. You come back, you look to the mirror. Nothing has happened. You do that mm-hmm. 1 week. You say, oh my God, nothing is happening. So I stopped doing it. But that's wrong. Everybody knows there will be a time and a day mm-hmm. where you see that your body comes back into shape. I cannot tell you the exact day, but it will happen. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to do with learning analytics. We have to continuously measure the impact, even if short term we don't see it, but there will be an impact. Therefore, we have to do it continuously over a longer period of time.
Okay, but ideally, looking at it, I mean, motivation is a factor. So in my ideal world, if you say you don't see an impact right away, so you're still setting forth a little bit of a belief that at some time there will be a change. So I was hoping that learning analytics could in the future be leveraged to the point where smaller increments can be seen. So bring it back to your analogy of losing weight. So maybe, actually, that's a very good example. Technology has developed to the point where I think we can see smaller increases, which helps motivation. So in your losing weight example, okay, maybe after week one, you don't see that much of a change, but I'm sure that, you know, with the increase in technology and finding different ways to measure the effectiveness of your training. So let's say doing body mass index or something like that, or other techniques, you can see smaller incremental changes,
exactly.
which motivate you much more. And
exactly.
I would hope that in the future that analytics can provide such a, you know, smaller incremental insights on the effectiveness of the training.
Exactly. And that's exactly. And if you look to this losing weight, I think they mm-hmm. also get better with analytics, meaning they can mm-hmm. tell you that your blood pressure goes down. Very so within a week, yeah. They can give you also signs that the consistency of your blood gets better, meaning mm-hmm. you see this early signs, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what we also want to do with learning analytics, showing the early signs of impact, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then following on and then having more and more impact. But to do so, yeah, you have to look to the right KPIs, meaning you have to look to the right questions. And
okay.
it's really, from my point of view, it really pays off. Yeah, there is okay. an old sentence, you only can improve what you can measure.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
And that's what you have to do. You can't improve if you don't measure.
Okay. I think, okay, so we have a fairly good view of where we are with a little bit of future integrated in that. But there is also, let's say, the near to far future. In the near to far future, the questions that I have is, where do you see analytics in the greatest technical development in the future, so or the greatest potential? Do you see it by, for example, XAPI in a unified standard, or do you see more machine learning possibly being one of the things, or even artificial intelligence being able to guide analytics?
Yeah,
in those three areas, yeah, do you see the most
potential? So I think first of all, you have to understand that machine learning is analytics. meaning,
okay.
Yeah, machine learning is pure analytics. What you do mm-hmm. is mathematical operations on data. Yeah, mm-hmm. Machine learning gives you a score, mm-hmm. yeah, a probability for a future decision. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there is a decision to make. Is this picture a cat or a dog? And mm-hmm. then learning analytics says it's a dog. So it's decision. Mm-hmm. It's decision support. Okay. Yeah. Is this cancer or not cancer? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's decision support.
Okay. Yeah?
Should a car brake or accelerate? That's decision mm-hmm. support. Yeah. So okay. meaning machine learning is pure analytics. It's pure decision support. But mm-hmm. the decision support is based on, let's say, algorithms which are different than traditional algorithms. So there is a neural network and you have to train the neural network. But one thing is clear. The confidence level of the neural network is as good or as bad as the data and the questions you ask. If you ask stupid questions.
So we're back to your main thing, yeah. asking the right questions.
If you ask, machine learning, in my opinion, the most important thing is asking the right questions. Because mm-hmm. if you ask the wrong question, then the neural network can learn what it will. It will always give you the wrong answer. Yeah.
Okay.
So therefore, machine learning is a key part of analytics. And therefore, sure, we will offer machine learning capabilities as a core element of our learning analytics. Because, mm-hmm. and that's what many people don't understand, that machine learning is equal to analytics. It's decision support. It's, I ask you a question and the machine gives you the answer. Is it a cat? Is it a dog? Should I brake? Should I accelerate? Should I go left or should I go right? Yeah. That's what it is.
So then you would see the future potential being in artificial intelligence then, since machine learning is more or less a current staple of learning analytics, then either XAPI in the form of making content a little bit more, putting it on the same level, unifying it, or artificial intelligence. That would probably be then the part where I would say, in my small area of knowledge, that would be the one that would be the farthest out in the future.
Well, sure. I think XAPI is also a use case for analytics. I mean, to track the usage of content and to store the data and analyze it. But of course, the bigger impact is on machine learning and artificial intelligence. But the point is that, I mean, we are now clear that analytics means decision support. So what is decision? What is decision logic? Decision logic is more or less if then else. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. decision logic. So, and there is a lot of decision logic which people still know the rules. They can write it down. Yeah. So meaning the decision rule is if this and this and this is the case, then do this and this. So if the decision logic is clear, you don't mm-hmm. need machine learning because you can write it down. Mm-hmm. In case the decision logic is complex and not clear, you have to learn it. Yeah. And then you have to use machine learning because mm-hmm. machine learning is an approach that a machine learns from data, meaning mm-hmm. the decision logic is so complex that you can't write it down on a piece of paper. Yeah.
Okay.
Then you have to learn it. And that's for me a very important aspect, that machine learning is always important if the decision logic is not clear. So a machine has to learn it based on historical data. And that's the reason why a neural network comes to a decision and nobody can explain why it comes to this decision. Because you have millions of parameters. Yeah.
Okay.
A big neural network has millions of parameters which are changed by every learning cycle. So you can't explain that. But if you want to make a car to decide whether to go left and right, you have to learn it. You can't write it down. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Wolfgang, I must say this has been a very, very interesting podcast. Once again, I'll have to listen to it again to catch everything that you say. But I have the distinct feeling that learning analytics is very close and dear to your heart. So I guess as a CTO, that makes sense. Makes me feel really good that the CTO is so involved and loves the topic to that degree. Wrapping at least this part of our conversation up on learning analytics, are there any final comments you would? What I've taken from it is that basically the push for learning analytics is basically to enable companies to ensure that what they invest in learning and development is effective, and that it's also to a certain degree fun, and that it actually provides a positive effect for the company rather than just blanketing, putting training out there for everybody to be available for training, but nothing more. So it's a continuous feedback and evolution. That's what I got out of it a little bit in my synopsis.
Yes, and I think that the key message is that learning and development has to switch to a more outcome-driven approach. Yeah, a lot of very successful companies are successful because they have a type of backward-looking approach. They look from the customer backward to the company. And learning analytics also needs a backward approach, looking from the outcomes back to the input and optimize the input based on the outcome. It's not sufficient to do learning and development as a traditional tick in the box function because everybody does it, so we have to do it. We have to put learning analytics on a strategic roadmap of the companies, and learning analytics can help to move learning and development from a tactical to a more strategic approach.
Okay, great. Then we'll come to our little bit off-topic questions. Well, this is still on topic. The question that I always like to ask is, if someone wants to endeavor to, you know, read more information or to jump more into the topics of learning analytics, do you have a book or an article that you would recommend?
I think that we from IMC, I think the marketing team and the product management team, they have written some white papers regarding learning analytics. So I think that might be a good source of input to get more insight in learning analytics. And then, I mean, there were as many books about analytics as about management. Yeah, I mean, everybody, you have the feeling that everybody wakes up in the morning and thinks, oh, I have to write a book. Yeah. So, but
the you wrote two books too. So,
I wrote also two books. So, I'm also part of the community. I think that it's how to say that. I think reading a book is good, but it does not make you an expert. So how many books about leadership are available? I think thousands and thousands and books. But it's not the case that if you read a book about leadership, then you are a good leader. Yeah,
no.
I mean, if I would read a cooking book, I would not become a good cook, for sure not. Yeah. So I mean, people sometimes overestimate what it means to read a book. Yeah. So how many books are in the market about a good, let's say, lifestyle? Yeah. What you should eat and what not. Millions.
Okay.
But look to the healthiness of a community in Germany or whatever. So meaning the point is you need some conceptual input. That's for sure. But you have to do what is the most important thing, exercising. You have to do it. Yeah. So exercising. It's the same as in sports. Yeah. it's you cannot do too much exercising. So you have to use learning analytics. You have to get it in place. You have to install. You have to apply it. So you have to learn via exercising. And of course, you can read a book to get some first impression about it. But the real deal is in execution.
Well, thanks, Wolfram. You just destroyed my next great model of an idea, and that would have been to make TikTok videos on learning analytics, but I guess that won't work. Okay, so we'll wrap this up then with our final question. Of course, I already have an answer for that. So the question was, we always like to ask, since it's called e-learning brunch, do you cook or can you cook? And I believe the answer to that is?
No.
No. So,
definitely no. I really, really love a good dinner and a good lunch. So I'm more a consumer. Okay. I'm not a provider. So I don't have the talent. So in my opinion, people have their sweet spot. Every person that gets born comes to the world with some talent. And either you have it or you don't have it. And if you don't have it, you never get it, in my opinion. And cooking is not my talent.
I might have to play this part of the podcast for my wife and just tell her that my cooking talent is not there.
Yeah. And you know, of course, if you exercise, you maybe become a cook, which is not that bad, but you have to follow your talents. And in my opinion, a talent is a gift. You cannot learn it. Yeah. Either you are a painter or not, but you cannot say, I would like to become a painter. If you don't have the talent, forget it. Yeah. Okay. So you cannot say, oh, I would like to become a famous football player. If you don't have the talent, forget it. You can train and exercise day and night. Yeah. So I'm a big believer of the philosophy of following your talents and not do what you think makes fun for you. But that's a very private opinion. So it's my experience. You see, when you see people, you see what their talent is and what not, and following your talent is not a bad approach.
Okay, so we you're the first. So we have a couple firsts. So you're the first IMC colleague that we have or representative that we had in this podcast, and you're the first individual that absolutely cannot cook. So those are two firsts, I would say. So to wrap up the section on cooking, then, what would be your favorite dish that you could probably mention, right?
I'm not a guy who only has this taste or this taste. So I like, let's say, a good piece of meat. I can also have a good dinner without any meat. So I try to eat very balanced, how to say that? Meaning try to balance the different things I eat. So, but of course,
What would be something that makes you, that you, if you would say, maybe it's, it could also be a childhood dish, something that you had, you know, in your childhood that you, the oftentimes with food, we combine, you know, memories of some type. So,
since when I was really young, I really, really like, that sounds maybe a little bit uncommon, really good spaghetti carbonara. Yeah. So if it's made really good, I really, really like that, to be honest. Yeah. Okay. So it's not a special, but if it's really made well, then I really like that. And it's, if my mother would ask me what she should cook when I visit her, I would say do that.
Spaghetti carbonara. Okay. So, thank you very much, Wolfram. I would say that's all the time we have today. So thanks again to my interview guest, Wolfram Joost.
Thank you.
If you want to get more information on Wolfram, you can just click, we'll provide a link. And of course, listen to the podcast. If you like the podcast, please smash the like button, or if you have any comments, please let me know. We'll provide links to Wolfram and the information you provided in our little summary. As always, we are happy to inform you and give you a little bit of edification on all topics around e-learning. So I hope you like the show. Thanks again, Wolfram. Our next podcast will be on May 11th. I'm not sure what the topic will be yet. We'll let you know as soon as I know. So be part of the e-learning revolution and empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to e-learning brunch. Thank you very much. Stay safe and stay healthy.